love you.
Woo! It's up!
Guys, welcome to the Young Turks. Jake, Hugh Grant, and Kasparian with you guys back together again after a little bit of a break. You know, Easter, we care a lot about it. That's why we put Transgender Visibility Day right on Easter. We'll talk about that later in the show. That story has the most fun fact of the day by a lot.
I doubt it.
Okay, no, it really does. Okay, so you'll see what I'm talking about when we get to that story, fun story. And I've got a lot of announcements for you guys today. We're doing basically a relaunch of our drive, Riders in the Storm drive. I'm going to tell you more about that a little bit later in the program. I've got a debate with Ann Coulter coming up. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that later in the program. And buckle up, brace for impact. I've decided to run for Senate. Yeah, April Fool's Day.
Yeah, that's.
Come on, I got to do it every year.
I knew it was April Fool's. Come on, I knew because. You just announcing it on the show without even giving me a hint about it prior would lead to your assassination, okay?
So there's no way I would have done that. But for half a second you thought it.
No, well, I mean, you're insane, so I don't know, maybe. There's a possibility.
I picked Senate not to mess with you guys too much because Senate is actually impossible, the primary already passed. Yeah,
you think that would stop you? You ran for president, Cenk.
This close, almost had it.
Okay.
It got 1.5% the other day in North Dakota again. Just needed a couple more votes to pull into third. Anyways, okay guys, much love. No, outside of the Senate, the other things are real. I'll explain them later in the show. But unfortunately, as usual, we start with devastating news out of Israel.
Well, it looks like there has been an Israeli strike on the territory of another country. So why don't we get started with that?
Iranian and Syrian state media saying that an Israeli airstrike targeted the Iranian consulate in the Syrian capital Damascus. And now reports suggest that the senior commander of the powerful Iranian Revolutionary Guards, Mohammad Reza Sahedi, was killed. So very significant, a high profile member of Iran's Revolutionary Guards reportedly killed.
As Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces mass protest against his leadership in an effort to oust him, it appears that Israel has carried out an airstrike in the territory of another country, Syria. And that airstrike has destroyed an Iranian embassy building in the Syrian capital of Damascus. Syria's defense ministry said that an Israeli aircraft targeted the Iranian consulate from the direction of the occupied Golan Heights on Monday. Syrian air defenses shot down some of the missiles they launched, but others made it through and destroyed the entire building, killing and injuring everyone inside, the ministry added. Now, Iran's consular building was leveled following the attack, while its main embassy building remained intact. The strike did, in fact, kill two Iranian generals and five others. The airstrikes in Syria killed General Ali Reza Zadi, who led the elite Quds force in Lebanon and Syria until 2016, according to Iran's Revolutionary Guard. It also killed Zadi's deputy general, Mohammad Hadi Hajri Hakimi, and five other officers. Now, a member of Hezbollah, Hussein Youssef, was also allegedly killed in the attack, and the Iranian ambassador, Hussein Akbari, was not killed. The Israeli military declined to comment on the strike, but four Israeli officials, speaking on condition of anonymity to discuss sensitive intelligence matters, acknowledged that Israel had in fact carried out the attack. So we've got a few more details, which I'll get to in just a moment. But Cenk, as I'm sure you would suspect, Iran has already said that they plan to retaliate. And this, in my opinion, is another attempt by Netanyahu to further broaden this war in the Middle East, which would drag the United States into a broader war, possibly with Iran.
Yeah, 100%. So let's break it down one by one. So how many laws of war does this violate? At least three, it appears. So they're assassinating a top military leader of a country they are not technically at war with. They're doing it in a completely different country. Both of those acts could be considered acts of war against Iran and Syria, since they struck in Syria, which again, to the right wing, I have to explain is a different country. And I have to apparently explain it to Biden and his administration too. We'll come back to them in a second. So number three, it looks like it was a consulate building, which is another potential massive violation. Of course, the IDF says, oh, it is a government building, but not a consulate or an embassy. Why? We declared it not a consulate or embassy. Yeah, I know, I know. You like to declare things. I don't take the Iranian government's word for it either, but I'm sure people will confirm whether it is a consulate or not. Again, Israel doesn't care and there are no consequences, but I'm just telling you the violations here. Because when Iran, of course, strikes back, you can say, oh no, you should go call on Iran to unilaterally surrender, and it's their fault for not surrendering ahead of a time for a war that Israel started. But you know what, it doesn't matter.
Is Israel the only country that gets to defend itself?
Yeah, apparently. So everyone else has to unilaterally surrender to Israel forever, and they will soon occupy the entire world, but it will be your fault, and they have a right to defend themselves and dominate anyone they like. Okay, so obviously we're doing hyperbole here, back to facts. So when Iran counterstrikes, as literally any country would, whether we like it or not, then Israel and America, you can write it down in stone, will all pretend that Iran started it. When you know today, Iran did not start it. This level of aggression, this level of international law breaking was started by Israel, indisputably. We're gonna get to why in a second, okay? So, but again, I don't want you to forget that, because almost all of our media will try to trick you into believe Iran started the hostilities.
So, okay. A few things I want to clarify real quick before we move on to more details about this story, which is still developing. I should note that. You know, you mentioned the right wing and their defense of Israel. Traditionally speaking, I would agree with that take, but it's interesting to see that there are divisions within both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in regard to the US's unwavering support and commitment to Israel. I mean, it's part of what you're seeing happening over at the Daily Wire, sure, but there's the America First, you know, MAGA crowd that does not want to continue funding and supporting Israel's war on Gaza. So I gotta mention that, because yeah, the issue is actually a lot more nuanced this time around, which I'm happy to see, because you have members of both sides of the political aisle actually in agreement in regard to how Israel's war on Gaza is unjust.
But I wanna be super clear about that, because when it comes to the voters, the issue is enormously nuanced. Giant sections of the right wing now agree with what has always been an anti-war movement on the left. The moderates, in some weird ironic twist, are a little bit more pro-war on both sides. And that is because they're the most brainwashed by mainstream media and mainstream politicians, who are almost all unilaterally pro-war. So when it comes to the voters, it's a hot mess, but in a good way, because they're defying their own politicians, okay? But when it comes to the politicians, to my knowledge, even at this incredibly late date, 100% of the Republican Party politicians at the national level are against the ceasefire.
Except for Massey.
Massey is complicated as well. Massey says no more funding, because he doesn't want to fund anything at all ever, right?
Agreed.
Okay, yep. And he's got his principles on that, but in his case, it actually is principles. I shouldn't do quotes, okay? He does it for everything, but it has nothing to do with Israel. He's just Dr. No on everything, right? Okay? But even Massey, I don't believe, is for a ceasefire. So 100% of Republican politicians at the national level are warmongers, love war, want more war. So they could stop lying about that today, okay? Because they're tricking you, right wingers, into thinking that they're anti-war, when in fact they're still, to this day, more pro-war than the bloody Democratic leadership that absolutely loves war.
And that includes, by the way, Donald Trump. So for the America First crowd, I would start really pressuring Trump to give you a little more clarity on where he stands and what his leadership would look like if he were to get elected and this war is ongoing.
Yeah.
That's really, really important because he's been able to skirt any responsibility because he's not in office right now. But I have, in my personal opinion, I have no doubt that if he were in power, he would side with Israel.
Well, that's not even close to a question. He's about to take a giant amount of money from Miriam Adelson, and he has done what Sheldon Adelson has asked him to do every time on behalf of the massively right-wing government of Israel. And in this case, again, the right wings don't match. The right wing in America doesn't necessarily want more war and certainly doesn't want to fight Israel's war on its behalf. Mm-hmm. But the right wing in Israel says, shut up. We already paid off stupid Donald Trump and stupid Joe Biden, and you will do as you're told. And those politicians do exactly as they're told. In fact, the one disagreement Trump had with Netanyahu was he thought Netanyahu was taking too much credit for the General Soleimani strike, mm-hmm. where Trump assassinated one of the top Iranian generals. So congratulations, Donald Trump and Netanyahu. Now you have that in common. You have both murdered a top Iranian general, which is much, much, much more likely to create a giant war in the Middle East that American soldiers will have to fight and die for. So if you think Trump's anti-war, it's total nonsense. He loves this bloody war and he just says, hey, finish them earlier. Let's get to the final solution quicker for these meddling Palestinians who I want them dead and done, okay? Hey, if he doesn't agree with that position, he should goddamn clarify, because right now all he's ever said is finish them. And he's arguing with Netanyahu about who started the war in the Middle East more. So that's who Donald Trump and the Republicans are. But now turn to Biden and the Democrats. They now want to send an extra $18 billion in arms sales and weapons sales and jet sales, on top of the $2.5 billion gift Anna's about to tell you about. So when Biden says he is criticizing Netanyahu and Israel,
it's all rhetoric. He wants to have his cake and eat it too. He thinks Democratic voters are idiots and that they'll just listen to what he says and take it at face value, and that they don't read, they don't consume the news, they have no idea what's going on in the world. We know what's going on in the world, Biden. We see it, we read it, we watch it. So he can give us all the tough talk he wants. He is in bed with Netanyahu and the far right government of Israel, period, point blank. Do not be fooled by anything that he has to say or verbalize. Go ahead.
Look, I just doubling out on that. He's not 99% full of crap. He's 100% full of crap.
Yes.
Because he's, I went to church. Easter, I'm such a good Christian and Catholic. And Israel, do not kill more civilians in Rafah. Meanwhile, he secretly gets them $2.5 billion, including in 2,000-pound bombs.
Yep.
And he says, murder anyone you like. Here's a free gift of American taxpayer money that I stole from them and gave to you so you can murder more Palestinians. And I'm gonna send you $18 billion more in sales, okay? But wink, I'm against what you're doing, wink. And in the midst of all this, when they asked, hey, you know, you guys say you have a red line and all that. No, the State Department's like, no, there is no red line when it comes to unconditional funding of Israel's military.
That's right, yep.
So that means Biden is 100% liar. All of that is just theatrics meant to deceive you. And by the way, it's not just the voters. Mainstream media needs to make that crystal clear. Every time Biden opens up his mouth and lies about how he's checking Netanyahu, mainstream media needs to interrupt like they do with Trump and go, sorry, we're cutting off this press conference because the president is lying. He has sent them infinite money and says he will never, ever not send them money. Infinite obviously is hyperbole, but you understand, I'm being very serious. They should fact check him because he's a giant pathological liar and he's lying about this. They do in the articles, but they don't when they talk about the context of him chiding Israel. And then lastly, we're gonna get to at the end, this is the most important part, why Netanyahu is trying to start a broader war in the Middle East.
To maintain power. To maintain power.
I'm gonna explain the nuances.
He sees the protests, and this is what world leaders typically do when they start losing grip on power. Okay, they either expand a war, they start a war, and that's exactly what Netanyahu wants. This man is so obsessed with remaining in power. He doesn't care how many people have to die as a result of his ambitious goal to remain in power. The guy's been in and out of power in Israel forever, and he will not let go. By the way, I should also note that Israel, a wonderful democracy, the only democracy in the Middle East, of course, has just voted to ban Al Jazeera, a journalistic organization, from reporting on the ground in Israel.
Because they won't do propaganda. They're doing things that are true. They're like, we can't let our own population see what giant liars we are. Ban the media, ban free speech. And here the right wing, you're in favor of that? I thought you love free speech. Why don't you hold a single one of your politicians accountable? That would be nice. By the way, Democrats, same of you. Don't tell me that they're such wonderful angels on the Democratic side, and you never hold them accountable as they send more and more instruments of war to Israel to kill Palestinians with our money.
So, do you want to elaborate a little bit on how this would lead to him potentially holding on to power before we move on?
So, guys, what's happening right now, and we're going to tell you more about it throughout the show, is there's massive protests against Israel, against Netanyahu in Israel by Israeli citizens. So, as you see us rage against the Israeli government, understand that the Israeli citizens are nuanced just like American citizens are nuanced. And a lot of them are against the Netanyahu government. We'll show you more later. But it's worse than that for Netanyahu, because there's now a pincer move where the Haredi, which are the most religious fundamentalist Jews inside Israel, they are most pro-war, but they don't want to serve in the military. They say, go kill those Palestinians on our behalf, but we don't want any part of it because we're special and we're more chosen than even the rest of the Jews. So we get to do exempt, because I don't want us to die. I want you to die while trying to kill Palestinians.
Think of it as a big group of Senator Lindsey Graham's, basically.
Yeah, right? and Joe Lieberman's and Joe Biden's and Hillary Clinton's, all the warmongers, George Bush, Dick Cheney, that's the Haredi, okay? So the fundamentalist, most pro-war, but I won't ever endanger myself crowd. So now they are demanding to keep their exemption. Mm-hmm. And there's two really important members of that group inside Netanyahu's government. If Netanyahu questions that exemption, as the entire, as almost all of Israel is doing right now, then they'll quit, and then they'll have to be a new election, and Netanyahu will lose. He's getting crushed in the polling in Israel, right? But in order to keep them, if he keeps the exemption, Benny Gantz says that he will quit. In which case, again, the government falls apart. And again, Netanyahu has to go to elections, which he will almost certainly lose, and this time for good. Okay? Last time he lost elections, I told you guys, you think he's gone? He's not gone. He's going to come back. And I was right about that. This time, he would not be able to come back. He would actually be done. So in the midst of this panic, where he's got political opponents on both sides inside his government that are about to end him, he just happens to murder the top Iranian general in a foreign country. Mm-hmm. Oh golly gee, did I expand the war so that Iran has to counterstrike? And when they do, we'll all pretend that we're special victims and no one could have seen it coming. How dare they defend themselves? Mm-hmm. And golly gee, you can't get rid of a horse in midstream. We were just in the middle of this war. It would be rewarding Iran and the mullahs in charge of Iran if you did a new election now. So you have to keep Netanyahu until that war is over 10 to 20 years from now. So that's how this game is played. That's what Netanyahu is doing. So I understand all the subtleties of Iran funding Hamas to some degree, Hezbollah to a very large degree, etc. And when you start talking about who started anything in the Middle East, it goes back thousands of years. But this particular provocation is on a larger scale, and Netanyahu has done it on purpose to try to maintain power within Israel when he's deeply unpopular. So if that war breaks out, it is totally on Netanyahu's head and both Biden and Trump, which have enabled him all along.
Well, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we have more updates on Israel's war on Gaza, including updates on some airstrikes that were carried out on tent encampments of displaced Palestinians in Gaza. And then later, we will also talk about the actual death toll of militants, Hamas militants, and the so-called kill zones that the IDF has implemented in Gaza, which has led to more Palestinian civilians dying. Don't miss it. We'll be right back.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Look, today we're launching, and you can see it at tyt.com/team and help. Both drive to get 100,000 subscribers. We're counting the 11,000 we already signed up in the beginning of this year. You can see it at tyt.com/team, and we're trying to get $1 million to get as a bridge to get us to safety for next year. We appreciate all of you guys that are participating, and already a lot have. So these will all count towards the goals. Jesse Baines just joined, and Nikki McDonald did as well on YouTube. Aludacon joined at a higher level. We appreciate you, it makes a giant difference. And Benjamin Webster, Jared Knezovich, Jax Payne, and Box just gifted a membership. Meg L, Melody Loves Music, gifted 5, and Chaplain Fred gifted 10. That helps tremendously, and we appreciate you guys. And finally, D Norod made a contribution on tyt.com/join, and that'll go towards our $1 million goal as well. You guys are the best. We have nothing but love for you. That's why we named it tyt.com/team, because we're all a team here together. That includes you guys, principally you guys. Otherwise, we don't exist. All right, Anna.
More on Gaza. Let's do it.
Tonight, more bloodshed in Gaza. Israel believed to have hit tents outside Al-Aqsa Hospital, killing and injuring a number of people, including journalists, according to Gaza health officials. I fell to the ground, this journalist tells NBC News, and saw my leg was swollen. We were in a journalist tent. Why did they target us?
Apologies for blurring the image of the journalist who was victimized by that airstrike. His face was bloodied, and that kind of gory imagery unfortunately doesn't bode well for YouTube. Nonetheless, despite the brazen disregard for human lives that we've seen by the Israeli government and the IDF, the Biden administration has just approved yet another round of military weaponry for the Israeli government. But before we get to more details on that, it is worth diving into that brutal IDF strike on a tent encampment in the courtyard of the Al-Aqsa Hospital. Let's hear more.
The Israeli military issuing this statement, calling the attacks a precision strike meant to minimize harm to uninvolved civilians, saying the IDF and ISA struck an operational Islamic Jihad command center positioned in the courtyard of the Al-Aqsa Hospital.
Though the Israelis described this as a precise attack on Islamic Jihad militants intended to minimize harm to civilians. But inside the hospital were injured journalists who claimed that there had been no militants and that they had been working in the camp for months.
We are unarmed journalists and we have nothing to do with anything. We were preparing to see where we should go to cover the news.
I just want to pause and take a moment to discuss the absolute gaslighting and insanity of the claim coming from Israel that Islamic Jihad was operating a command center out in the open in a hospital's courtyard. Is anyone really buying that? Is anyone really buying that?
Yeah, well, look, number one, every politician in Washington is pretending to buy it, because remember, 100% of the Republican Party and 80% of the Democratic Party, not its voters. The voters are the exact opposite, okay? But of the politicians at the national level, they're all against a ceasefire. 80% of the Democratic politicians, 100% of the Republican politicians are all against a ceasefire, saying, no, kill more. We want you to kill more, not less. So that's the kind of disgusting pigs that run our government, let alone what Israel is doing. Now, in terms of does anyone in their right mind actually believe anything that the IDF puts out? Yeah, if you're super biased, and it happens because of loyalties, etc., and ethnic background. I know it happens in my community, in the Turkish American community. I know that it happens in this community. It's a normal human phenomenon that happens in every community. Yes, those people will believe anything the IDF says. Oh yeah, I bet it was all Hamas and Islamic Jihad. Oh yeah, the baby, Islamic Jihad. The 18 women there, all Islamic Jihad. I made up that number. The actual number is 300 people dead in the hospital.
Al-Shifa.
Yeah, and as they're going through Al-Shifa, reporters said it looked like a scene out of a horror movie, what they had done to that hospital. And did they then come out with proof? Oh yeah, here's the Islamic Jihad Center. It's a, no, they never bother.
Why would they? They don't need to.
They don't need to, because what they have to do is they just say, oh, they're all goddamn terrorists. And American media runs headlines saying, Israel says they were all goddamn terrorists and had it coming. And paragraph 17, it'll say, There's no actual evidence that they're terrorists, and it looks like it's all innocent people that were murdered there. But anyways, the headlines already did the damage. And by the way, a week later, they'll run a pretty good piece in Washington Post or New York Times or CNN, yep, explaining that in fact everyone murdered was murdered, and they were all civilians. And oh golly gee, oh, we fell for the IDF propaganda again earlier. And by the way, 98 out of 100 of you saw the headline when we put it up on there, and only 2 of you saw the actual story we put up a week later in the middle of the newspaper.
There's no end in sight when it comes to this war. If you're under the impression that there's only one final leg of this war and that's in Rafah, I think that you're joking yourself. But remember, President Joe Biden has declared that an invasion into Rafah, the southern border town of Gaza, is his red line. But what does Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu have to say about that? What is his response? Let's take a look.
There is no victory without entering Rafah. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu saying today the operation in Rafah has been approved and will move forward, a move the Biden administration has called a red line.
So the invasion into Rafah will happen. I have no doubt about that. And what is Biden's response to Netanyahu crossing his clear red line? Providing more weaponry to Israel. Which means there was never a red line. It was all talk. So according to new reporting by John Hudson over at the Washington Post, there's been yet another round of weapons sent to Israel to the tune of billions of dollars. The new arms packages include more than 1,800 MK-84 2,000-pound bombs. Those are the bunker buster bombs we've been talking about. 500 MK-82 500-pound bombs, according to Pentagon and State Department officials familiar with the matter. The 2,000-pound bombs have been linked to previous mass casualty events throughout Israel's military campaign in Gaza. Now, if you're wondering just how much money this is all worth, and remember, this is just one of the many, many rounds of weapons that have been sent to Israel since this war began. Last week, the State Department authorized the transfer of 25 F-35A fighter jets and engines worth roughly $2.5 billion. The case was approved by Congress in 2008, allegedly. I'm not really buying that, and there's no clarity about this in the report. I would have loved for Hudson to elaborate on this a little more in his report, but nonetheless. So the department was not required to provide a new notification to congressional lawmakers. The MK-84 and MK-82 bombs authorized this week for transfer also were approved by Congress years ago, but had not yet been fulfilled, allegedly. I mean, obviously that line is coming from the Pentagon.
Yeah.
We're supposed to sit here and believe that Congress passed legislation or approved weapons transfers all the way back in 2008, 16 years ago. And it isn't until now that the White House is transferring the weapons over to Israel.
Yeah.
Come on.
Number one, I don't believe anything that the Pentagon or the American government is saying. They will do anything to help the right-wing government of Israel. There are no red lines, that's a joke. Anyone reporting a red line without noting that it's a joke is a fraudulent reporter, which covers like 97% of them. Or let's be honest about it, let's be clear about it. Biden set a red line. By the way, when he said that, we pointed out, no, he didn't exactly say that. And they're giving him credit for talking tough when he didn't earn that credit, and it's not true. So you could break down our reporting, it holds up 100%. Okay, we tell you stuff that's gonna happen before it happens, because this stuff's not hard to figure out. Okay, now you look at if it was true that he has a red line, well, Netanyahu just spit in his face, said, I'm gonna cross your red line.
Yep.
And what is Biden doing?
Send more weapons.
He just gave him a $2.5 billion gift, which he claims, oh yeah, we had this in our couch. And we meant to give it to Israel in 2008. Look at what I found. $2.5 billion of taxpayer money, all in the most lethal weapons we've created, minus the nukes. By the way, they say Israel has asked for more, but we didn't give them more. The 2,000-pound bomb is the biggest one we have, I believe. What did they want? Nukes? Did they want to nuke Gaza? That would be a hell of a story. So the 2,000 pound bombs, guys, are the ones that we think are so immoral to drop in inside a city that we didn't do it when our soldiers were heavily, in the biggest fight of their lives in Fallujah and in a couple of other cities in Iraq. And we refused to drop those bombs to protect our own soldiers because it was so deeply immoral to kill that many civilians to try to take out a military target. But it's not immoral enough if when we just gift it to Israel. Hey, Israel, you'd like to murder in a deeply immoral way? Oh yeah, go ahead. The American taxpayers are still funding it, right? Who cares, as long as it's Israel. I mean, America wouldn't do it, we're not. But as long as Israel asks us, we'll give them anything we want. And now, story broke just before we got on air, that they want to do $18 billion more in weapons sales.
Right.
So, where's your red line? If you're a Biden fan, your best argument is he's the weakest person in America. He's so pathetically weak. If he draws a red line, of course he doesn't mean it. He's a coward and a loser and a pathetic blob who'll do whatever the right wing government of Israel will ask him to do. Oh, you must be so proud as a Biden supporter.
Well, let's move on to the next story because I want to talk about the incredible reporting from Haaretz in regard to kill zones that have been implemented by the IDF in Gaza and what that actually means in regard to the militant death toll. Palestinian civilians who have been killed by Israeli Defense Forces were later described as Hamas militants simply because they made the lethal mistake of simply existing in one of Israel's so-called kill zones. That's not me just saying this. This is based on reporting out of Israel by Haaretz. Now, according to Haaretz, Israel is now saying that 9,000 out of the 32,000 people killed in Gaza were allegedly Hamas militants. If you can remember, not too long ago, the military was alleging that 12,000 out of the 32,000 were Hamas militants. Now they're changing their tune. But even the 9,000 number is very likely incorrect, and I'll explain why in just a moment. Now, according to the reporting, the Israeli army says 9,000 terrorists have been killed since the Gaza war began. Defense officials and soldiers, however, tell Haaretz that these are often civilians whose only crime was to cross an invisible line drawn by the IDF. A host of reserve and standing army commanders who have talked to the publication cast doubt on the claim that all of these were terrorists. They imply that the definition of terrorist is open to a wide range of interpretation. It's quite possible that Palestinians who never held a gun in their lives were elevated to the rank of terrorist posthumously, at least by the IDF. In practice, a terrorist is anyone the IDF has killed in the areas in which its forces operate, according to one of the reserve officers who spoke to the publication. So basically, if you are a Palestinian who, by the way, none of them know where the kill zones are. So if you're a Palestinian who happens to wander into a so-called kill zone, the IDF takes you out immediately and labels you as a Hamas militant.
Okay, and I want to give more context here. So number one, based on what Anna's saying already, they said 12,000, now they're saying 9,000. What does that tell you? That tells you they were lying earlier. That's now establishes a fact. Because I've debated now several different people on air where they've used that 12,000 number. So I assume they're all going to go and retract right now on Twitter and all these other places. Oh, I'm sorry, it turns out the IDF were goddamn liars and I didn't mean to believe them. Now it's down to 9,000. And wait, should I believe that? Because the earlier one was definitely a lie. It's now proven to be a lie. Will they say that? No, they will not. One of them will ever correct anything. Because the whole point is to lie and to do propaganda. And by the way, they will then say, you should correct a tweet from like, earlier in November, because the hospital was kind of, yeah, we destroyed it before and after. But in the middle, there was some Palestinian dude that walked by and knocked over one of the bricks. You need to correct it, and everyone in media needs to correct it, right? Well, are you going to correct this? No. Are you going to correct the fact that UNRWA never was with Hamas and that Israel provided zero evidence of that? And that's also proven now? No, no one will ever correct those things. The Israeli government lies almost every time. And that's because they're a government. That's what governments do to protect their own ass. Okay, now moving on to the figures. So remember, about 23,000 of the 32,000 killed are women and children. And even the IDF knows it's kind of weird when you include women and children, you get caught rather easily.
Right.
That's why they realized, oh damn it, the math doesn't add up. We were pretending 12,000 were terrorists. Mm-hmm. 23,000 minus 32,000, 23. Okay, we gotta change the number, just change it. Just change it to 9,000. And that'll be justifiable because those will be males.
Because all men are allegedly Hamas militants.
Yes, if you don't know that, that's actually technically what the IDF has done in the past, where they said anyone who's a male inside Gaza counts as a terrorist, an adult male. Okay, so now we're beyond that. Every adult male is a terrorist. This is the most deeply racist, bigoted, genocidal, point of view you could have. But now anyone inside a kill zone, men, women, and children, they're all terrorists. We kill them all. They're literally inside a kill zone. We murder them all and then go, well, posthumously, after they're dead, we're gonna call them terrorists, so it's okay.
It's disgusting.
You see how we're trying to avoid civilian casualties?
Okay.
Go ahead, say it. Say it, Americans. Go ahead.
Let me give you more, because you literally have IDF soldiers who are speaking to Haaretz about this, including one senior officer in Southern Command. That individual told the publication the following. It's astonishing to hear the reports after every operation regarding how many terrorists were killed. You don't need to be a genius to realize that you don't have hundreds or dozens of armed men running through the streets of Khan Yunis or Jabalia fighting the IDF. Further, this individual says, it's not that we invent bodies, but no one can determine with certainty who is a terrorist and who was hit after entering the combat zone or the kill zones of an IDF force.
So the kill zones you know are true, let alone the Haaretz reporting, let alone the fact that it's Israeli military in leaks that confirming it, etc. Guys, remember the three Israeli hostages that they killed? I don't know if that was a kill zone or not. I mean, it feels like the entire Gaza Strip's a kill zone, but they shot them without asking any questions, even though they had a white flag, they had no shirts on, and they were speaking Hebrew. So if you're in a kill zone, I gotta ask, somebody should follow up, and Haaretz, great reporting here. We appreciate it. You see that? Inside Israel, there's dissent. They're not a monolith, and there's some great reporting. Excuse me, I've been trying to prevent that the whole time. Okay, last thing though.
Let it go, Cenk, let it go.
Okay, so Haaretz should follow up that great reporting by asking, so were the three Israeli hostages inside a kill zone? Mm-hmm. Is that why you killed them without asking any questions? And is it the policy of the Israeli government to murder anyone inside a kill zone without ever asking any questions?
Yeah, that's a great question.
And by the way, is that how you make great efforts to minimize civilian casualties?
Every civilian casualty is a tragedy, Cenk.
It's a tragedy, but luckily it's not that big a tragedy because after we killed them, we just called them terrorists.
That appears to be the case. And look, honestly, this reporting is so important in helping us understand previous stories that we've shared with you all, including the story, remember there was Channel 4 News with a group of Palestinian men in Gaza. One of the men wanted to go back to a home in order to get his wife and his mother and other relatives out of the home. And so he's holding a white flag. It was very clear that they were innocent civilians. And as they were standing there waving their white flag and with news media right there, the IDF shot and killed the guy. So that must have been a kill zone.
Remember the six-year-old that was stuck in the car? And they send the ambulance to go rescue her, and the IDF murders her and everyone inside the ambulance. I don't know if that was a kill zone or if all of Gaza is a kill zone for the IDF. But so one of our members asked, hey, how can they possibly, here, I'll read it real quick. Theater Goddess said, if that attack was designed to minimize civilian casualties, I'd hate to see what it looks like when they try to attack citizens, referring to the Al-Shifa hospital attack, where the reporter said afterwards it looked like it was out of a horror movie, 300 dead, the whole entire hospital destroyed. And that's an excellent question. If they were trying to minimize civilian casualties, that should be asked of the Israelis. But the reality is, guys, they're not trying to minimize any casualties. And their one point of pride is they say, no, we're not trying to murder everyone in Gaza, because if we wanted to, we could kill all of them. So you see how we're only doing a genocide and not a Holocaust. So we're the angels, we're the good guys, and we're the moral ones, and they're the dirty terrorists. I mean, after we killed them.
The final thing that I want to add to the story is, every media organization that has given in to the bullying of the Israeli government to basically label the Palestinian Health Ministry as the Hamas-run Palestinian Health Ministry in order to delegitimize the figures coming from them, even though historically, time after time, their figures have been proven to be true. I want you to keep this reporting in mind. Because which side is lying about casualties here? Which side is lying, Cenk?
Yeah.
Which side has been proven to lie, and which side, historically speaking, has proven to be accurate in the reporting of the death toll numbers?
This reminds me of Obamacare. The Republicans thought they were going to damage the Affordable Care Act by calling it Obamacare and go, ha ha, I see that'll hurt you. But it actually wound up not only helping the Affordable Care Act, but eventually helping Obama's popularity.
Right.
This is similar because Israel says, you see those accurate numbers coming out of the Palestinian Health Ministry? That is no good Hamas. But wait a minute, we've just seen, according to your words, the Hamas health ministry be right almost every single time, and the IDF be wrong almost every single time. So you just accidentally did a giant ad for Hamas. So you can keep doing that ad. Oh, you should never report civilian casualties out of Gaza because Hamas has been exactly right about everything, and Israel's a but. Wait, hold on. Oh, yeah. No, I don't care. All I care is it real or is it not real? Is it true or is it not true? I know a lot of people in America, they don't care what's true. They just care my side. My side is always right. The other side is evil and terrorist and deserves to be murdered. Okay? But if you're not a lunatic and you haven't lost your mind because of bias, etc., all of us can see the health ministry has been right all along, and the IDF has been proven to be gigantic liars at almost every step of the way.
One more quote. I can't help myself. It's really important to hear from people who actually know what's going on, including this following statement from a reserve officer. In every combat zone or kill zone, commanders define such kill zones, says the reserve officer. This means clear red lines that no one who is not from the IDF may cross so that our forces in the area are not hit. The boundaries of these kill zones are not determined in advance. As soon as people enter it, mainly adult males, orders are to shoot and kill, even if that person is unarmed, says the reserve officer.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. There's a very simple, much quicker way to get to that. There's a word for that. It's called terrorism. When you purposely kill unarmed civilians, you are a terrorist. And I don't care how much propaganda you do, if Israel is the one doing the terrorism, then their government officials and their IDF are the terrorists. And they have now killed 30 times the number of innocent civilians that Hamas has. We condemn Hamas. I don't think that's hard at all. That's their big trick. Oh yeah, you condemn Hamas. That did 1/30th of what Israel has done. Yes, easy, definitely condemn them. Now, do you condemn Israel that has killed 30 times as many women, children, babies, grandmothers, aunts, uncles, innocent civilians, murdered them, and then said, well, they were inside a kill zone, so they had it coming, even if they're unarmed. Our order system is to murder everyone inside that zone. No, not terrorists, beloved angelic Israeli Defense Forces. No, sorry, not everyone inside there. It's not there, a lot of it's conscription. So for some portion of them, not their fault, like the American soldiers going to Vietnam, it wasn't their fault. It's the fault of the people giving the orders. But the people giving the orders inside the Israeli government are definitely terrorists and significantly worse terrorists than Hamas leaders. If that hurts your feelings, take it up with the Israeli government that has authorized even more murders of innocent civilians going forward, let alone what's already happened.
I'm with the Israeli people who are demanding demanding to oust Benjamin Netanyahu, and we're going to hear from them when we come back from the break, so don't miss it.
All right, back on TYT, Jang and Anna with you guys, but also Chungus John, who just joined, and so did Carrie, Dragon Yaya, and Desiree Upgraded. And they all did that through the join button below the video on YouTube, and we appreciate you guys so much. Meanwhile, Green Pixie gifted a membership on YouTube, and Bronco and Paul Fredrickson gifted 5, and Lewis Malone and Fines both gifted 50. So you guys are amazing. We love you guys. That'll go towards the 100,000 subscribers we're trying to get to by the end of the year. And thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Let's keep it going. Anna.
Mass protests in Israel over the weekend. Things are really heating up on the ground there. Let's get to it.
While in Israel, a new and fierce wave of protests. Thousands taking to the streets in Tel Aviv and across the country for a second day in a row, calling for Prime Minister Netanyahu to resign.
Go sign this deal, get the hostages back. There are measures that should have been taken, and they didn't take them.
Protesters gathering tonight, warning they're not going home until the hostages are back.
Tens of thousands of Israelis took to the streets and absolutely demanded the ouster of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and an end to the ongoing war on Gaza. On Sunday, the protesters moved from Hostage Square Plaza in Tel Aviv to the parliament in Jerusalem. Protesters were heard chanting for Netanyahu's removal. Netanyahu addressed his critics in a primetime speech, saying, quote, "The pain of the families," meaning the family members of the hostages, "breaks my heart. I think it breaks all of our hearts. Anyone who says that I'm not doing everything to bring back our hostages is wrong and is misleading others. The calls for elections right now," this is what he's really concerned about, "at the height of the war, a moment before victory, will paralyze Israel for at least half a year. And the first person to celebrate this will be Hamas." But some Israelis are not convinced by Netanyahu's statements, including Zahiro Shahar Moore, who is the uncle of a hostage who is currently held captive in Gaza. He says the Israeli government is actually misleading the public about how they are victorious in this war. Let's take a look.
There's a lot of pressure coming from the cabinet ministers, stating these thoughts, okay, be quiet, play along, come with us to this delegations and meet with the UN and put pressure on outside players, but don't say anything to contradict the official governmental line. And the Israeli public is being pumped with together we will win, and we're not winning at all. So this charade should stop. We need some international intervention, because the way things are going in Israel now, we're jumping straight head down to the abyss.
I have to say, I mean, look, it's obviously crazy how little Netanyahu cares about human lives in Gaza, but he also doesn't really care about the destruction of Israel. Right, under his leadership, as long as he gets to remain in power. It's unbelievable. And I give, like, my heart goes out to the family members of the hostages. I can't imagine what it's been like to withstand the reports of this war, the complete destruction, the lack of humanitarian aid, all of that civilians in Gaza are suffering from, the hostages have been suffering from as well. All those airstrikes, the aerial bombardments, the lack of humanitarian aid, the lack of water, lack of fuel, lack of hospitals that are functioning. Hostages are dealing with that too. I can't imagine being the gentleman that we just heard from right now.
Yeah, so part of the reason that Netanyahu does not make much of an effort to get the hostages out is because if he got all the hostages out, he has no reason, or not a good enough reason, to continue the war against the people of Gaza. Because Yeah, of course, some percentage of Israelis and some percentage of Americans believe that this is a war against Hamas. And that's because they want to believe that, right? But the rest of the world, like 98% of the world, knows that there is a war against the Palestinian people. That starving the Palestinians to death has nothing to do with Hamas. It also starves the hostages, by the way. And already dozens of people have died from starvation, and 1.1 million people are on the brink. And they are telling both the British and the American governments, you are not to bring any aid in without us clearing it, and it'll take as long as we want. And yes, those places are jammed up. Shut up, send us the money. And no, we don't trust you. We think you might be working with terrorists. So we're gonna slow your humanitarian aid into Gaza. Oh, but golly gee, this is a war against Hamas. Oh, we just leveled all of Gaza and drove everyone to the south. And now several cabinet ministers say we should push them into the Sinai Desert and outside of Gaza entirely and ethnically cleanse them so that their entire population there is destroyed and wiped off the map. But this is a war against Hamas. It doesn't matter if you believe that, no one else does. And so
I mean, Gaza's valuable real estate, Cenk.
Yeah, that's valuable real estate. Jared Kushner, who was in charge of our policy on Israel and the Middle East when Trump was in office, he was literally in charge of that entire region. As a clown son-in-law who's a total failure at everything he's ever done. And so now he says, what do you mean? There's really valuable waterfront property in Gaza. We could just take that and build something nice after we drive out all the Palestinians. So,
but I really want
to. I want to say, look, I know some in Israel believe, oh, it's such a wonderful, great, holy war, or whatever they believe, right? But as you see here, a lot of Israelis go, hey, wait a minute. It doesn't look like you're making any effort to get the hostages out. They're seeing the same thing that the rest of the world is seeing.
Exactly.
And they're saying, enough. You're making no effort at all. This is obviously to protect your own political career. And we want to get those Israeli citizens back and alive. And every day you don't do that, you're endangering their lives for your own goddamn career. And we're not going to take it anymore. That's the kind of rebellion that's in Jewish culture that I love.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I have no patience for anti-Semitism, for even any anti-Israeli civilian like rhetoric. I find it disgusting. I have no patience for it, especially because it's the same kind of gross black and white thinking that we speak out against here in the United States on other issues all the time. And I want to read a few more quotes from protesters, Israeli protesters from the past weekend. One of them said, quote, our country is being led by a gang of nutcases that jeopardize not only our existence, but our well-being. This is not the way we grew up, and these are not the values that we hold.
Perfect. That's what how many times did I tell you guys that? And then people call me apologists for Jews and all they call me every kind of name.
What does that mean, apology?
Yeah, what does that mean? Yes, I'm an apologist for all human beings. Okay, so guilty as charged. But look, folks saying the same things we're saying here inside Israel, saying we see you, man. We're not blind, we're not dumb. And what we value is a culture that questions authority. That's what you do in temple, that's what you do in Saturday school. And that's a beautiful part of the culture. And we're not gonna just sit here and go, oh, Netanyahu said it, so it must be true. That's like a BS line you feed dumbass American politicians so they have a fig leaf for doing what they do. It's not a thing that's real.
One more quote, let's go to graphic five here. Another individual, Eniav, whose 24-year-old son, Matan, is held in Gaza, blamed the prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, for torpedoing a deal for a temporary ceasefire that would have allowed Israeli hostages to be exchanged for Palestinian prisoners. Quote, you stand between us and bringing our loved ones home, end quote, she said, addressing Netanyahu, of course. So I really hope that they, you know, keep that aggressive spirit alive and hold their current far-right government accountable for what's happening, because I think the actions of the Israeli government have made it abundantly clear that they don't genuinely care about the lives of the hostages that have been held captive in Gaza. The only time they were able to free some of those hostages is when they agreed to a temporary ceasefire. But Netanyahu keeps lying to them over and over again about how no, military pressure is the only way. They're not stupid, okay? They have lived through this so far. Israeli civilians have seen how this assault on Gaza has not really been fruitful for the return of Palestinians. I'm sorry, for hostages in Gaza.
And last thing here, guys. So also in that great quote that we showed you is the idea that we've also been talking about here for months now, which is this is not just about the Palestinians. Israel was meant to be a safe haven for Jews across the world who were bullied and intimidated and killed, etc., right? But you can't have a safe haven as long as you're keeping 5.5 million people prisoners. And I don't, again, if you think occupation is a lovely state that they shouldn't complain about and they should just shut up and be ruled and it's their fault for being ruled and imprisoned, I'm not gonna be able to help you because you've lost sight of all rationality and logic, right? But if you're a decent person, which a lot of Israelis are, you know you're never gonna be safe as long as you keep those people occupied. No human beings of any ethnicity or race are gonna go, oh, okay, we will be permanent enslaved people who are living under occupation and we'll put your boot on our necks, please. We love it and we'll comply from now on. That's not gonna happen. You're gonna have endless conflict, endless war. So you've got, when you get to new elections, which I hope you get to, please elect someone with a mandate for peace so that Israel can be safe. And the Palestinians can be safe, and the Palestinians can have a state. By the way, you'll hear in Israel this nonsense from the right wing of, well, don't reward Hamas and its terrorism by giving them a state. Instead, let's have war forever, right? And that'll show the terrorists. No, it won't. It'll just create more terrorists. And so the reality is it's a trick. And I could just flip it on them super easy, and you should as well. The number one terrorist this world has seen in a long time is Yigal Amir, who assassinated Yitzhak Rabin, the Israeli prime minister. Yitzhak Rabin was likely going to do a peace deal. So do not reward the worst terrorist of our lifetimes by not doing peace.
Right.
Amir said, I'm gonna murder the Israeli prime minister so that we never get to peace and the Palestinians never have a state. Every day that you do not get to a two-state solution is a day you reward Amir for murdering Prime Minister Rabin. So two can play at that game. Get the peace right now for the sake of both people. And it looks like Israel might be headed in that direction, and we greatly welcome it.
Trump is having trouble fundraising, and we'll get into the details of why when we come back for the second hour of the show. Don't miss it.